Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Cinema D'Amore. I'm Chuck Phillips, joined by
Justin Morgan, and we're here with
Jacob from Three Deemers Podcast. Thanks for having me, guys.
Anytime.
Yeah. And this week we're still snowed in, although it's the last time. Maybe there's a little hope at the end of this episode. A little bit for the future. We've had some pretty downer endings for the past 3 weeks that did not end in happiness at all. But this week we're talking about Snowpiercer, the ultimate snowed in film. When it's the entire planet is snowed in.
I don't know if you're gonna get quite a happy ending, but it's
it's happier than our last three movies.
It's happier than the other three, yeah.
Is it? Wow. What dark shit have y'all been covering?
We did Great Silence, The Thing, and A Simple Plan.
Nice. So wait, my co-host for my show, Lexi, didn't get to talk about Snowed In on Snowed In Podcast?
She did. She's on The Thing episode.
Ah, gotcha. That's where she rants about Snowed In. Okay.
Yeah.
Which is a good theme, Chuck.
Yeah. Well, we had to do something. We didn't want Christmas again. We've done.
I like it.
We said no to Christmas.
We've done Christmas enough. We skipped Christmas this year. We did not feel like it.
We gave up on it. We decided to take our season finale break after Thanksgiving. We're like, let's just take Christmas off. Fuck Christmas. Yeah. No one cares. Check out Miracle on 34th Street. You know, the usual. We're just like plugging all of our previous Christmas stuff.
We ran into that. We did. First year was like unusual Christmas, or I don't even remember how we phrased it, but we did typical. We did Batman Returns. We did Gremlins, Krampus, Silent Night, Deadly Night. We did all those. And then last year we did Feel Good Christmas. That was enough Christmas. We did the weird stuff. We did the standard stuff. There was nowhere else to go.
We did do a December of Star Wars, though.
Yeah, we randomly threw Star Wars in for Christmas. Yeah,
we did step
gotta
away
keep
from
it fresh.
Before.
Gotta keep it fun. I like this simple theme of snowing shit in, and Snowpiercer's a good one to jump in on. Plus, I love my kind of out there films, and this is one of those movies I like because it's got that kind of B movies feel to it, but it's super A quality, phenomenal acting, brilliant fucking cinematography. So it's really exciting to talk about it. So thanks for having me here.
I was on the Three Deemers podcast, and he brought up Snowpiercer. And I said, we're going to do Snowpiercer.
And I begged to come on.
He starts spoiling some of Snowpiercer. And I'm like, I know that I've had 8 years to watch it, but I haven't.
Oh, wow.
He's been told so many times by so many people.
It ruined it.
I've owned it for like 3 years now, and I hadn't watched it.
That's on you.
He's repeatedly been told to watch this film.
Partially why Chuck picked the movie, so I could finally watch it.
Yeah. That's kind of like how we told people when we covered Dune, when Justin came on to join us on our podcast. We covered Dune, and... you know, he's like, hey, you know, spoilers for a movie that came out in 1982. And I'm like, that's kind of on them at this point. 30 fucking years, 40 years. That's on you.
Yeah, they're listening to the episode.
Yeah, they want it.
They're looking for the spoilers.
They're trying to get it.
Those people exist. I guarantee you there's somebody that listens to this episode knowing that they haven't seen Snowpiercer.
And they want that spoiler, huh?
This is a weird way to try to find some spoilers for it, but we'll get them.
Yeah, this is Bong Joon-ho's only, so far, only English language film. I don't know why there was that time where just all of these big Korean directors made one American film for whatever reason. You had this, The Last Stand.
The Last Stand by my favorite fucking director who did so many amazing Korean movies. And The Last Stand is the most beautiful homage to 90s and late 80s action cinema starring Arnold.
That movie's insane.
So fucking good, though.
Another one of my favorite directors, and I have never saw that movie or Stoked.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was the other one from, Park Chan-wook did that one, which,
I speak English, and I say, nope.
Yeah.
I only want your Korean language films only, man. No, I like them, and I like that these directors, they actually get a chance to do something like this, because it gives us amazing films like The Last Stand, or the one we're covering today, Snowpiercer, which I love this director, too. Bong is amazing. I'm a huge fan of the host. I have yet, actually, surprisingly, if you want to give out spoilers, it's okay, but I have yet to watch Parasite. I plan to. I just keep forgetting about it. Like, I just keep getting caught up. I'm not drawn to beautifully cinematic and like Academy Award winning films. I'm just not drawn to them. But I know that this director is amazing and always delivers, because I loved Mother. I fucking love The Host. Yeah, good stuff all around.
I can guarantee you that his sights were not the Academy Awards.
He did not expect that, huh? That was just a, oh, okay, really? Cool.
That is one of the very few times where the Academy Awards was right with their decisions and also surprised me.
It was also the first time, I believe, a foreign movie took home the award for the first time in a long time.
Yeah.
Quite possibly for the first time ever.
I think it was for
it's
the first
definitely
time
the first South Korean film to win.
Yeah. It feels like it was 100%. It was going to be like more or less a direct-to-video streaming type of film, because even though it's English language, it is still made from Korea, and a Czech company, I guess, financed this film, Snowpiercer. And it really feels like it was just destined to be a straight-to-DVD thing, which is odd considering how far the director is now, like that he's an Academy Award-winning director, and he was making a random sci-fi movie that was basically, going to go straight to streaming and straight to video.
This was his wheelhouse, in my opinion. This movie is 100% his wheelhouse. I did a little digging because I really like this movie, and I wanted to check out the TV show and all that, and since you guys were talking about it and invited me on, I was like, I gotta need to do a little bit more digging. I found out that this is based off of a French graphic novel, which the director Bong was a huge fan of, and so when he reached out to, I believe it was one of the writers that helped co-create it, because one of the authors is dead, the other one's still alive, so that company, he reached out to him, and he found out, like, hey, I'm a big fan, I'd love to make this movie, and they're like, how did you even know about this? I didn't know it was translated, and they found out there was an illegal copy translated in Korean, which was what he had, and they're like, oh, this is great, and they sat down, they started talking about it, and they realized this guy's got it, he can really bring this to life. So I thought that was fascinating. It's based off of a graphic novel, and I also love this movie for one major reason. This was a big middle finger and a huge fuck you to Harvey Weinstein, because one of the things I always talk about on my podcast is that the producers, there's always too many fucking hands in the pot, especially when it comes to certain films like this, and Harvey Weinstein wanted him to edit it down, do all this shit, put a bunch of voiceover work, and Bong refused to move, and so it kept forcing him to not get basically an American release. And what ended up happening was, like you said, the video on demand, they released it and it broke records. I mean, it set high standards that to this day, even during the pandemic, most have not been met by those numbers that they made. I thought that was really cool. So basically it was a fuck you to Harvey Weinstein, and didn't want to push. And there's all kinds of funny fucking articles you can get with Weinstein going, yeah, we knew it wouldn't sell on audiences, but you know, we released it on video and look at that, it was a huge hit. And it's like, fuck you, Weinstein, fuck you. So yeah, props to Bong for that, for just having the guts and determination to stand by his work and not give out to Hollywood studio producers. Sorry, I'll go into rants sometimes. I'm kind of like my co-host.
I like your rants.
I found this movie when I was working at Walmart, and literally we were putting out the new DVDs for the week, and I saw it and I picked it up because I didn't know anything about it beforehand. And I'm like looking at it, I'm like, oh, I didn't really hear about this movie. And I'm like looking at the cast list, which again, for a movie that basically didn't really go and have like a huge theatrical release, to have Chris Evans, Octavia Spencer, Ed Harris, John Hurt, all of these... All of Tilda these huge Swinton. Actors are in this film, and it's
Jamie Bell.
Yeah. Everybody is in this film, and
fucking
I'm like,
Spud,
how did I not
from
hear
Train
about
Spotting.
This? Everybody's in this
film. I felt the same way you did. I randomly came across it maybe a year after it was released on video on demand. I think Netflix bought it. I feel like it's been on Netflix for like the last six years.
Yeah,
because I saw it on Netflix randomly. I just sat down and I was like, what is this? I want to see Captain America on a train. This looks cool. I hit play and like I just got sucked right into it. Like the movie pulls you in. It feels like you're on a train ride, you know? It was awesome. Also, you can still watch it on Netflix. They're finally going to get rid of it. January 3rd, it leaves Netflix. So you guys have until January 3rd to watch this on Netflix, which has been on Netflix for like six fucking years. So looking at you, Justin.
I remember hearing about this movie pretty early on. One of my accountants, he was talking to me about how he turned this one down, but they came back to him for Okja, which was the Netflix movie with him. He's like, oh, it's great. They're all stuck on this train. They're the only survivors in the entire world because of global cooling. I don't know what you want to call it.
It's global warming. It's actually global warming, because the science behind global warming is everything fucking freezes. Which is the funniest fucking thing, because people are like, it's not hot, and it's like, that's not really how it works. It's just a bad use of words. We're dumb Americans. That's what we. I don't understand science myself, so I'm not one to talk, but yeah, it's global warming. It made everything freeze.
The movie turned out actually surprisingly well. A lot of these movies that are using the English language and they're from foreign directors usually suffer a lot, where the foreign director can't get the subtext very well in what the actors are saying. I think this movie, like, there were only a few lines that seemed a little off, but mostly they were all pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
There's something Tilda Swinton says when she's doing her shoe speech.
Yeah.
Something about it is just a little goofy, but she makes it work.
I think that Tilda Swinton is one of the most gorgeous, ugliest women I've ever seen in cinema. I mean, I'm just drawn to her. Everything that she's in, I'm drawn to. She is the Gary Oldman of method act. She is so fucking talented. Like, she put on fake fucking teeth and I still believed everything about her character. I love her character and hated her at the same time. Tilda Swinton, amazing. I think it was a really smart choice by Bong to put in the Korean actor who's in Parasite and a couple of his other movies and have the whole language barrier where they showed some futuristic devices with like the translation mods. And I liked how they were able to communicate that way. I thought that was a really neat way to show like a little bit of his writing and being, well, you know, I can showcase Korean acting with this American acting. I thought it was a great crossing over. That was really neat.
I do love the long monologue from him. So and good. Then it just says it can't translate.
Yeah.
It.
Yeah. He's like basically cussing him out or something.
The translator is great. And I enjoy how you can hear it. You can hear it translate in the background and it doesn't always match up what the subtitles are. Like the subtitles will say, you know, what the character's saying. I think he tells him at some point, like, no, I'm not going to help you. You're from the tail section. And then, but you, when you hear the actual translation from the thing, it's like, I'm not going to help you, you tail section trash or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, all these things that like, it's not even putting on the subtitles. It's just in the background from the thing. I do enjoy those moments of them together where you get those little things that keep getting lost in translation between them.
What is the premise of this movie?
Everyone is stuck on a train because they launched satellites or they launched some sort of chemical into the air. They say that it was supposed to solve all the climate change problems and yet just accelerated the freezing and there's snow and it's just an icy landscape across the entire planet. And there's one train that Wilford makes that just goes around, does a circuit of the entire planet. I will say Wilford and the design and like aesthetics of the train in this movie in general makes me think a lot of BioShock. He feels like a very Andrew Ryan character in that he has these ideas and everyone mocks him for them and says he's like crazy and that these will never work. And he brings it up and that's like part of his backstory. Even the way the kids that were shown watching like a propaganda film about him feels like something out of BioShock. Like when little Wilford was just 5 years old, he loved trains and it literally just cuts that kid going, I love trains.
Oh my God.
That's Wilford.
That's probably one of my favorite Atlas scenes. Shrugged really hard.
Yeah. Which that was very much. Yeah. There's a lot of Ayn Rand, I guess, probably in the background of his character as well that really comes through as it does literally seem like he's just a guy that was obsessed with trains and he just happened to also somehow make a train that could survive.
He saw it coming.
He did. He
was
prepared.
Yeah. Everyone called him crazy, but he was Noah building the ark. I mean, there's so many cool fucking religious satire, definitely huge social, political, society commentary, major societal commentary. And it all, to me, plays out beautifully. I think it's great.
There's like several films rolled up in the one in this.
Yeah, there
something
are.
Cool.
I do think that this is something that Hitchcock himself would love.
Oh, absolutely.
Just the way that the story has to be told literally from cart to cart to cart.
Every car is like a different world.
For a while, they're all kind of the same. Then they get the themes, essentially.
True. I was gonna say Hitchcock would actually love this movie too for the cinematography alone, because what Bong does as the whole movie, you follow these people from the tail end of the train making their way to the engine, and you go through each cart, and as you progress through each cart you see more of different layers of society, different layers of what you need to exist within the ecosystem within this train to keep life going in this apocalyptic world. And the way he uses tension is by doing a fuckload of zooming. I don't know if you guys started noticing that. Did you ever feel kind of claustrophobic in tight space where, like, you know, they're fighting each other with axes and it feels so close and tight space because he's constantly zooming the camera in and out. Every time there goes to be a fight sequence, they'll run up and the camera will zoom in, literally making you feel like the space is getting tighter and tighter. So like the way he filmed the train was very well done. Everything is narrow. Everything is tight. Everything zooms in. There's no fancy crane work. There's no fisheye lens. It's all basic camera work with just a fuckload of zooming. And it works so well.
He also does a good thing. I know he has a rule that he set for himself is that everything always had to go from left to right. He never wanted to film characters going from right to left through the train. Like he wanted it, had to have that vision of it constantly in forward motion. So he had that as a rule that every shot that's like from a side view of a train car is always has to be all the characters progressing from left to right. So you never get confused about which way they're supposed to be going or who's doing what. It always has to be constantly moving forward. It never goes backwards.
Perfect linear projection.
Yeah, that does help this movie. It's not overly long. It's only two hours long, but it just doesn't feel like it overstays itself because it does have that just constant feeling of it's always moving forward. It's never stopping and going back. It's always going back. Other than only a handful of times do we ever, once we get out of a car, we never see anything from that car again, other than like once or twice where it kind of goes back to a character, or when the character goes back to the someone kill everyone at the back of the tail. But almost always they're constantly just watching Chris Evans just moving forward the entire time.
Yeah. I think the train cart where they go through the aquarium to the sushi bar is probably one of the most beautiful scenes. I love that whole scene. The sequence, the way it plays out. Because I love the aquarium. So walking
train
through that
cart too.
Right? Yeah, I wasn't expecting that. I was like, how'd they build this fucking aquarium? Like, it's so cool. And then they had the sushi moment and they're, you know, having sushi. But like, I like that as you're taking this journey through the train with them, you're getting answers as you go along. Because there's so many questions when you jump into this. You get a lot in the beginning and you're like, oh, these poor bastards in this tail. Like, they're supposed to be the last remnants of survivors in humanity, but like, they're given no humanity. They're forced to eat these protein bars, which as they progress to the train, they find out is made by a bunch of crushed up cockroaches because there's no food for them. But then as you progress past that, you hit the fucking sushi bar and you're like, well, why aren't we getting fucking sushi? Why aren't we getting this food? You pass through a fucking like garden cart and there's like fruit and trees. Stuff. Yeah. Plants and like vegetables, you know, then you hit the classroom. So like, you start to see more and more complexities of these carts and realizing like, oh, there's more people in strain, there's rich people in strain, so it's like, yeah, they can afford this life, you fuckers stay
like,
at the back.
This is disgusting. And that guy's like, well, I eat it too.
Yeah, yeah. That guy that has no problem with it, he's just there. The aquarium car is a good like kind of a little bit of a foreshadowing thing to when he gets to the end with Wilford, and that everything's explained to them, and they kind of ask those questions too, like, oh, you have all this food and why don't you share it with us? And she even says, oh, you're lucky that you're here. This is a rare occasion. And they ask why. And she tells them about how they only have enough fish that they can only afford to serve sushi in January and July. They can only have it twice a year because they have to keep a constant balance of all things on the train. Like, you can't have too much of one thing or too much of another. Everything has to be in perfect balance, which is pretty much her way of telling him that's why we had to make sure the people in the tail section are kept in check, because otherwise you'd overrun the whole train because there's just more of you back there than there realistically are of us in the front. But we don't have enough food to support all of you back there. So every once in a while we had to cull the population basically and, you know, get rid of a lot of you guys. And there's quick ways to do it. There's quicker ways to get rid of a lot of you all at once.
I like how they start to play out the numbers game, because as you progress more and more, you know, you're following this revolution and each cart is like a chapter in this film and it shows the progress they're making. And then like, you get to a point where you start seeing people just relaxing at a nightclub, people relaxing, getting their fucking hair done, you know? And it's like, what the fuck? Like, these people are just chilling. And they're like, well, who are these weird scragglers like walking with Tilda Swinton coming up in our carts and shit? Like, what's happening here? You know, you get to the schoolroom. The lady in the sauna was great. You get to the schoolroom too. I love the schoolroom scene. Like you said earlier, you see these children being brainwashed with propaganda. But then you also realize, you know, in the beginning of the movie, you had some kids in the train that got pushed up further along, and you're also trying to figure out, well, what happened to those kids? They're not in the schoolroom, so where'd they go? Well, that's because they're not rich kids, they're the kids from the tail. So obviously there's going to be something darker, more sinister that they're being used for, which will get revealed as you keep progressing through. And I love the school teacher. I absolutely loved that character. Just I know it's such a short scene, but man, she fucking nailed it. And then they have the whole thing where she tells them about Wilford. You get all these answers about the train, you know, like what we talked about earlier, people thought that Wilford was crazy and like, you know, he still pushed forward and he saved humanity and now everything has its way of being. And like, oh, it's a new year, here's our eggs, let's celebrate. And they're, you know, eating these eggs and being all lovey-dovey and the lady's all pregnant, you know, and she's singing songs and playing on the piano, and then the bitch pulls out a fucking Uzi and starts lighting everybody up, and you're like, oh, fuck, it's a trap. Like, they don't want these fucking people.
It's a good line, because earlier they have the guns, and Chris Evans' theory is that
they're out of
don't have bullets after the last four revolutions or something. He ends up being right in that moment that he literally puts a gun to his head and pulls the trigger and knows that they don't have bullets, so they're able to overcome those first guards.
Yep.
And then later, there's that line with the eggs.
Yeah.
Where they're like, I thought eggs were extinct.
Chickens, I thought chickens were extinct.
Yeah, they're like, but you also thought bullets were extinct too. And like pulled the Uzis out of the eggs.
So good. That's what I'm talking about with that writing, that style that he does, that Bong does and carries through the whole progression of this film. Everything is answered. Everything is shown to you. You're given answers. And even things that you're like, well, where'd all these people sleep? You know, you don't really see cards where that look like houses or anything, but you also haven't seen every cart, so you assume as they're making their way through, they're going through different areas. Obviously, they probably pass through a fucking sleeping cart section because people live somewhere on here. Just, I guess, for time, you can't show every little detail, but it's implied, and it's heavily implied to where it's like, if you have a question, it's going to get answered, and from what you're given, you're able to piece things together, and I like that. It's very simple. It's very smooth. It's, like we said, one perfect linear story, and you get the whole way through the current train.
Her teacher wasn't wrong either. She's like, if you try to escape, you'll be like the Seven.
The Frozen
you'll
Seven.
Die. Mm-hmm. If the train stops,
well they show that
we're going to die.
Well, they also show you in the very beginning when they punish the man and they stick his hand out the train for 7 minutes and it frozes solid like liquid nitrogen. And then they just smash it with a hammer and you're like, oh,
that has
fuck.
To be the most inventive idea, I think, entire movie.
Absolutely.
And I do like everything that comes to follow, but the fact that in the back end of the train, this guy that had obviously thought out the train before this even happened had put in a punishable device where they clasp that thing on the person's arm so that none of the cold air gets in.
Yep.
And it's such a great moment. I always love when something is used as a weapon or a torture that you haven't seen previously in movies. And that one stood out to me. I love plant and payoffs. I'm a big fan of that. And there are so many in this movie. I definitely thought when I saw the crap that they were eating, I thought Soylent Green.
Right. I was, a little bit of me thought that too. When they're like, it's just cockroaches. I was kind of like, okay, well, at least it's something. At least you're not eating people. But then you get to that scene where you have Chris Evans having that really amazing monologue where he's going over about like the previous revolutions and how they all fell, you know, Gilliam being the leader, how he gave up his arm and all that. And, you know, he's being pushed in this like direction to be the leader, but he doesn't want to be because he doesn't feel he's worthy. And you're like, well, why are you questioning this? You're a badass. You're Captain America. You're a hero. You're leading this revolution. Why can't you see that? And he's having that moment where he's talking to the guy and he's like, listen, he's like, I was there when these revolutions, you know, come up and fail. He goes, I was there when we, you know, had to resort to these terrible, terrible acts. He goes, I know what people taste like, and I know that babies taste the best. That scene right there, that fucking line, whoo, shit got me. I was like, oh, fuck. Like, that's when you see this hero being super fucking dark, having this great, great sin within him that's just like, almost unforgivable act where you're like,
I mean,
get
his backstory
it,
was he was there for 17 years. Mm-hmm. He was 17 when he got on.
Yep.
And then he's been there for 17
years
and it becomes the 18th year. But he talks about these guys that were trying to kill this woman and eat a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And he ends up being like that guy. And the baby was Edgar's
friend. Yep.
Little, this guy, kid that looked up to him.
The one he had to sacrifice to in the end as well.
Right.
Yeah.
I killed his mom. I tried to eat him. This guy cut off his own arm. He's like, people were cutting off their limbs for us to survive. And I couldn't even do that. Like, I've tried a few times.
Yeah.
And I couldn't even do it. I do think this is his best role.
Oh, 100% one of his best roles.
Way better than Captain America.
He's a phenomenal Captain America, but this is a brilliant acting role.
I'd say maybe, this I like, and probably Knives Out is like my next favorite from him. Like, those are both like really, really good showcases of like that he's more than just a... More than just like a muscle, you know, guy. He doesn't just have to do that. Doesn't have to be the hero.
Let's not forget, Not Another Teen Movie. Fantastic.
We can't ignore that.
He has whipped cream and a banana coming out of his ass. Come on, Captain. Come on.
I do think though, I love the way they set up again all the cars and how they all serve a very specific purpose. Like they're all very like utilitarian. They only have one purpose to be there. And as you go through and you start to get the different ones, but I think my favorite one has to be when they just open the door and it's just a cart full of dudes with axes. And there's the idea that there's literally a car that has nothing but dudes in ski masks with axes that are just there to make sure no one gets past them. And that's like they're like, I just imagine they wake up every day and it's like, all right, let's get back in the car.
And what's great about
this
scene?
We're just here for all day.
That's such a physically compacted scene. With both amount of people in that car and the amount of shit that's going on, because you arrive, the door's open, there's all these fucking guys in ski masks with axes, and then they start to fight.
The door opens. Wait, don't open that door.
And then all of a sudden they celebrate the new year while they're just kind
of
like having a standoff. And you're like, what is going on? That's when the 18th year started. Yeah.
The night vision goggles that are going on their heads.
Yeah.
And they're like, and then, there's a tunnel after that bridge, and they're like, it's a long tunnel.
And then they yell for a torchbearer, so like torches just come up. It's so well done.
There's so much stuff going on.
What, 10 minutes on that scene? Oh, so good.
I do love the humor that they keep. There's a lot of humor in this film.
Really well done.
For being a you know, dystopian future film, there is so much comedy going on as well. And I do love when they pause for the New Year's Day, and like the one dude in the ski mask like laying on the ground, like blood coming out of his mouth, and he's just like, "Happy New Year!" Like he's still excited about it, even though he's dying. And like he looks over at Chris Evans like sitting there, and he's just like, "Happy New Year, man."
Like, cinematography is great too, especially that scene where they keep doing the blood spatters on the background of the windows.
And all the zooming in.
All the zooming.
Constant fucking zooming in.
It's very atmospheric. I think my favorite atmosphere cart is the sauna. Yeah. It's just eerie, and the way that they have the saunas built into the side walls, it feels like anybody could be around any corner at any given
moment. That lead up to them getting to that sauna room where the train's hitting the corner, it's taking that giant curve, and you have Chris Evans and some other random bad guy shooting at each other from across the train, because they're like in different train carts, but they're like at an angle for so long that they're able to just try and fire bullets at each other. It's fucking great.
His lover like died early on in the movie, so
I guess
he wanted to avenge him. But I really do like idea that when the train was making it's going around this like hillside, and it was like making a U shape, they were able to shoot from train to train. It's actually a pretty funny moment.
Well, and it was kind of semi-sciencey too. They were trying to line up the shots, and like they were getting closer and closer to being direct shots.
I was waiting for a window to fully break and everybody to like freeze to death in that car.
Yeah.
But I also like where the guy shot and it got it like right where his face was, and then he shot at Chris Evans, and I saw Chris Evans was stuck, but I thought the guy was gonna drop dead for a second. I didn't realize that his was also stuck in the bulletproof window.
Yeah. Yeah, and then they chase each other to the sauna. And again, the fight sequence in this are so well done for that close space fighting. So like you get guns, you get knives, you get axes,
torches.
It's fucking wild, man. It's fucking wild. And of course
they're like communicating with this prisoner.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And they're like, how's the prisoner going to help us if he got captured? Like, can he get out of that? And they're kept in these like awful, like morgue containers that are locked, and he's locked in there for drugs. So his persona is that they're going to do everything. They're going to excel from cart to cart to cart to cart, being rewarded with this drug every single time. They're just sniffing it.
Yeah. It's a flammable substance that causes hallucinogens if they inhale it, I believe. Yeah. What is it? Coalite, something like that.
Yeah. And they keep stealing it from all those people that are partying.
Just grabbing shit off trays,
It is a good moment at the end where he's like, I'm not worried about this door. And he points to the Wilford's door. He's like, I'm more interested in that door. And I'm not really on drugs. I've been collecting this stuff because it's a bomb.
Oh, it's so good. Again, talk about your big payoffs, because, you know, the whole point is to make it to the engine, to make it to Wilford. But that's not the other man's objective. His objective is, I want to fucking live. I want to try. I don't care if I freeze to death. I want to get off this fucking train.
And that's another plant and payoff, because he goes, we'll freeze to death. And he's like, actually, about that, I don't quite believe it, because I looked out the window when we went over the bridge last year and I saw part of a plane fuselage. And this year I could see the wings.
Yeah.
And that means things are melting.
Yep. Which I like that they add to that. And it makes you wonder, like, with the whole, like, how they made the guy in the beginning stick his arm out for 7 minutes. And they talked about how, like, you know, when you see the seven that are frozen on the hill, like, that's as far as they got. And it was within a certain amount of time that they got that far. And you start realizing more and more, like, okay, it's dropping hints that it's taking longer for things to freeze. So, you know, you start noticing things are actually melting. I think that's really great. Like you said, there's a huge payoff with everything. You're given everything you need, and you're building upon this story. And then by the end of the movie, you're getting more answers. And kind of like you said earlier, when they make it to Wilford, you know, he's given this basically like Wilford wants Chris Evans to take over for him. He's old, he's dying, you know, and he finds out all these horrible things.
He's also Ed Harris,
who's amazing. And he finds out that Gillum, you know, was actually his best friend, that they planned these revolutions all the time. You know, it was supposed to end and it didn't. So, you know, he had to pay the price and get killed for it. And he just realized, like, God, this Ed Harris is just a bastard. Like, he's just a fucking horrible person.
I don't know how bad it is, but they opened the door and the guy was very far away. And I'm like, is that Ed Harris?
Yeah.
Before he like said anything.
It's totally Ed Harris.
Then he was talking and I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's Ed
and
Harris.
It's one of those moments that's like, it's really cool, because you see that like as Ed Harris talks to Chris Evans, he's so desperate. and so just distraught and tired and worn out by just the life that he lives that he's almost about to take him up on that offer until finally the little Korean girl that's with her dad, you know, she breaks into the room. She's like, hey, man, get your shit together, and like is able to lift up the floorboard and show that like, oh, we found the missing kids from the tell. They control the fucking train parts. Like they hide in little compartments and have to keep the train running, you know, and he has to rescue these kids. And so he sticks his hand in and sacrifices his hand to finally make an actual sacrifice and be a leader and rescue this kid. Tries to stop the other kid.
That limb that he couldn't lose before.
Yeah, because another, the train's slowing down. Here. And it's great because the train starts to slow down now. The reactor starts to mess up and the engine can't stop. So this other kid comes crawling out of a fucking floor hole.
Andy.
Gets into the fucking...
Dumb fuck.
Yeah, he gets into the goddamn reactor and sacrifices. And so you realize that these kids are brainwashed. Like, they've been used. And you're like, they're not people. They are parts. And it's so fucked up, but it's so beautifully done. And it allows Chris Evans to have that moment where he returns back to like, I'm gonna be the hero this time, and like in a true
it's also
way
a good final moment for the movie. You get to that last, you get to the engine room, and Ed Harris says, you're the only person that's made it the whole length of the train, and we don't know where those kids are at. My first thought was like, well, where the fuck are these kids that we've been on every train car?
They're an actual moving part of the fucking engine.
It reminds me of like a Portlandia joke where they're, if you've ever seen the sweatshop episode, and they say, oh, those tiny hands, those would be perfect for putting buttons on clothes. And that's like what it reminded me of, because they were literally measuring the kids up in like a ridiculous way.
And it's good that you brought that up too, because it is commentary on child labor and sweatshops that like us as a society, as Americans, you know, we get products from Mac and from Apple and all these other, you know, companies that have overseas workshops, and overseas they have kids child labor, like they have little kids doing this stuff for us, making those little fucking buttons. And so like it's really neat to see these social commentaries that, like, to me, watching this again, having spent a fucking year in lockdown and during a pandemic, really puts a lot of things in perspective that, like, A, I feel that Snowpiercer is a movie that was way ahead of its time, but still tragically holds because of the bullshit we've had to suffer through recently, and allows you to see that, like, our society is easy to collapse, and the things that we rely on to make it easy for us, it's harder on others. You know, there's a lot of euphemisms in there that, like, you know, it plays on the whole, like, blame the fucking immigrants, blame the people that have to collect benefits, blame the low-income society, it's all their fault, you know. And it's like, dude, they're just like us, just trying to survive. So again, the commentary is very strong and very well done, in my opinion.
I like first class economy and then the freeloaders.
That's it. Guys. Fucking freeloaders, even though they're eating each other and babies. Goddamn freeloaders.
I have a question. I know you only watched the pilot or the first couple episodes of the Snowpiercer show.
Yeah, I finally got
when
to watch
it. When does
it
take place? Is it redoing it, or are they like explaining it from the beginning?
All right, so I've only watched the first episode. I finally got to watch because I want to check it out before we do this, you know, and I come from the Three Damers podcast. Check us out. A podcast about remakes. That's right. Plugging it. Yeah, so on our show, you know, we do that, and I always find it fun whenever I get to co-host on other people's shows. Anything that's related to a remake or a reboot, it's exciting for me to bring up. So I have to do my due diligence and check out the TV show. So the first episode, the very beginning, it opens up with the whole story of the world and what's going on. And it's all done within like 5 minutes, all right? And you basically have the same storyline that you have in the movie. You know, the world's global warming, these missiles they shoot into space, it doesn't help, everything's freezing over. Basically, humanity's on the edge of dying out. This train is 1,001 carts long. It is made out of 1,001 carts. So we finally learn how long this train is. 1,001 carts. The tell is where everyone is rushing, that are like just the last remnants of society trying to survive. They all bombard this thing and rush in and try to get on this train. People are getting killed. People are being tossed out. Others are, you know, escaping, making it in. And then finally the doors close. This thing takes off. The world fucking ends. The train's in motion. So there you have your tell. All right, you've got the tellies, the tell one, the one tell, whatever they call themselves. And
so it's starting from the beginning.
The very beginning.
Like,
but
it's
then
it's gonna be like the first revolution or something.
But then you have a moment where like it fades out, and then it's 6 years later. So for this first episode, and I believe most of the first season, it is 6 years after the train has been in motion. The movie, we know from what Chris Evans' character said, 17 years. He's been there for 17 years. So this is during the first 6 years.
18.
It became 18 during the trail. Yeah. So this picks up during the first 6 years. And it's kind of like they've had one small little revolt, but got put down really quick. So they've already had people started getting the sacrificing of limbs, but no cannibalism has started yet. They hint at it sort of, but they already have their protein bar. So I feel like it's one of the things where it's like it's nodded to, but not really fully discussed. So maybe they had the cannibalism.
It's already had to have happened. It had to have. Said that Chris Evans says that they got the protein things a few months after they started doing the sacrificing of their own limbs. So by the time protein comes around, then they're not cannibals.
At all. So it basically does that. It picks up right there. So you get 6 years in. And you follow a character who basically is the only detective on this entire train. And you find out that everyone else that paid to be there was, you know, someone of importance somehow in the world previous before the disaster. So all these people at the tail, every now and then they'll get a chance to move up into the carts if a position is needed, something to be filled, whether it's prostitution, whether it's like simple waiting, cooking, things like that. People that have some kind of skill that can help the train continue on. And with our main character of this show, you find out that he was a police detective, and there's a murder, and they need him to basically help out with this murder that happened on board. And the whole joke is like, oh, you didn't get a detective because you didn't expect rich people to start killing rich people. And that's kind of the premise of the movie, is following this guy who is trying to save and get this revolution going with the people in the tail to, you know, try and get some equality. And at the same time, learning what he needs to know about this train. So you start slowly getting to see more things that we didn't get to see in the movie. For example, you're going to start seeing living quarters. You're going to start seeing different areas of the compartments that, you know, the movie was just for time restraint, just couldn't show you everything, but you had the idea. Like I said, a lot of stuff was implied.
I mean, I also feel too, if there's 1,001 carts, there weren't that many in the movie. So I imagine that they're going to lose some carts in this TV show.
I was literally thinking the same thing too when I was watching it. I was like,
that's like way too many carts. Like, I don't know what happens, but I feel like they lose a few and then they have to like adjust. I have no idea.
Mm-hmm. And of course, you've got Jennifer Connelly in it, and she's fantastic because it's Jennifer Connelly. Who doesn't love Jennifer Connelly? You remind me of a babe. But yeah, I liked it. It's good. It looks good. And it has the same lighting setup, same style. The trains look great. You also get to see more, because you're following Jennifer Connelly as well, you get to see more points of view from the people that paid for their tickets, you know, the citizens that have rights, so to speak. So you get to see their world. You get to see the rich world, the people that live in comfort and style and very lavish. You get to see what they go through. So I thought that was really cool that you're getting that aspect in the show, because the show can kind of pace itself out, give you more and all that stuff. So it's very interesting. I'm definitely going to check it out. I recommend it. Like I said, I've only watched the first episode, but I was hooked and I was digging it. And so far it seems to be doing a pretty good job of the world that was given to me in the movie. So I'm excited to check it out.
Well, I finished watching the Chucky show that was on Sci-Fi, and I just like that there was an episode where they were playing the music from The Shining, and the music from The Shining was also in this movie while they were in that sauna cart, where I don't know if he's a huge fan, or if, I'm sure he is.
Who knows?
Of The Shining, but when they were fighting that guy, the gun in the sauna room, they were playing The Shining music, and I'm like, well, this is odd. I don't know if it's exactly a reference or the music is just creepy for the moment.
Who knows?
We still have more reveals. Like, there's so many reveals in this movie. The one being that Wilfred was working with Gilliam the whole time, and then Curtis, who's Chris Evans' character, calls bullshit, and he's like, nope, and he switches his little phone around, and it cuts to the back of the train where it's that Wilfred symbol that him and Gilliam had talked in front of, like, very early on in the movie.
Yeah.
And the other guy that killed all the people, like, flips it, and there's the phone. Mm-hmm. The only thing, though, I think is weird is that it rings like an old-school phone. You think somebody would have heard a phone ringing at some point.
Well, maybe it was just Gilliam was always the one that called him.
Gilliam just calls, yeah.
Yeah. Well, he did say, he said Gilliam would talk for hours. He's like, that man could talk.
Yeah, it sounds more like he was the one that would initiate these phone calls to Wilfred.
The vibe I got from the TV show also made it feel like there's still a chance, like you were saying, later on down the road as the seasons progress, that they could introduce Curtis's character, Gilliam's character. They could introduce these people. Maybe played by a different actor, I'm sure, although it'd be awesome to see Chris Evans, and it'd be awesome to see, you know. But yeah, it's one of those things, like, there's plenty of room to grow, plenty of room to work with. And like I said, I like the idea of getting more.
I do love, I think my favorite final lines of any movie is in this film, though, when we finally get to that end, and Ed Harris describes, you know, he tries to convince him to take his spot. You know, he needs someone else to take care of the sacred engine, as he always refers to it as. You know, it's this living thing that he needs to keep going, that he feels like that's, you know, obviously he feels like sees himself as like a savior to everybody, that, you know,
yeah,
if the train doesn't keep moving, like, everyone's gonna die, and you'll be responsible for the end of the human civilization. You'll be responsible for killing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how he views himself, and wants Chris Evans to take over for him. And yeah, it seems like he's going to, until he, you know, finally sees the kids and, yeah, makes that sacrifice. But I don't know, there's something about just that final moment when Ed Harris just sits down and just before the train gets ready to crash, and he just goes, nice,
yeah.
Like, he's just so angry that, like, the, like, oh, cool, yeah, everyone's just going to destroy my entire life's work all for one kid. Yeah, real cool.
Yeah, like right before everything blows up. Yeah, that was a good moment. Yeah. Well, and there was the scene, too, where he's starting to lose his shit. And so Ed Harris just sits down and goes, why are you being so melodramatic? It's like, fuck you, dude.
I enjoy when the guy starts fighting him, and he's the high partier with angel wings on his back.
So good.
And he, like, pushes him into the gears, some sort of mechanical thing that crushes him, mm-hmm, and the wings are, like, still sticking out as he gets sucked down inside.
It's so good. The whole film in general is just unbelievably good, super underrated, needs more people to see it. And kind of like what you were saying, everyone in this film, they treat Wilfred, Ed Harris, as if he's a god. There's the cult-like following. There's all this, like, all hell, Wilfred, we're alive because of him. And then you meet Wilfred, and he's more like, no, I'm not the god. The train, the engine, that's the god. This is what we give sustenance to keep us alive. So it's really neat to see those
perspectives.
Didn't
expect a person to be there. I thought
me neither,
Or I thought maybe they didn't even go that far. Like, it was just going to them blasting their way out of that side door and leaving it. Like, we'll never know who was in the front of that train. But if you didn't get to that engine, then you wouldn't figure out what the kids were there for. And I do like the moment, too, where they can't get that door shut to, like, block themselves from the explosion from the drugs.
Yeah.
And they, like, encase the two kids, like, in the amongst themselves, and then you get that big blast that causes a goddamn avalanche.
Yeah. And then you have that, the survivors after, where they come out. And you're like, they didn't get burned alive? Because it looked like everyone died in that explosion. That explosion was pretty massive. That's a big bomb.
I think everyone died in the explosion except for those two characters at the end.
Yeah, the little girl and the little
boy. Because there were only like three or four carts that survived. So those people were all fried. And then everyone else fell off the fucking cliff. So
yeah, they did.
If they didn't die during the fall, they're going to die. They're going to freeze.
They froze to
death.
I love the ending, too, when the little girl and the boy, they walk out together and they're in the snow, and it's like, all right, they're not freezing. And she even is able to take her hood off, and so she's exposing her face even more to the elements. And you're like, okay, maybe her dad was right. There's a potential that they could survive. And then it kind of ends with them seeing this polar bear in the distance, showing us that obviously life is continuing on.
That polar bear.
And then it ends.
I
would say, but then it ends, and the movie's been really dark, where part of me goes, is that a sign that life continues on, or they're just fucked again? Like, I don't know which, because polar bears are pretty fucking
territorial. I mean, where do you go from there? They don't have any
aggressive
skills. You know what I mean?
It's kind of an Adam and Eve hint, you know? It's like starting over. You gotta
Snowpiercer
start society
too,
over.
The bear takes care of them.
Yeah, right. Hey, that shit can happen. Did you hear about that kid recently that was lost for a few days in the woods and was taken care of by a bear? Shit happens. The polar bears save humanity.
It is a hopeful ending, like,
it is.
The cinematography tells you everything's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. I don't really know where they're at in the mountains. Yeah. I don't know if they're going to be able to find. I mean, they are pretty close to that tunnel. They could survive, and they weren't walking towards it.
And then, like we said, the camera, it ends just in time to know if polar bears are going to find out what babies taste like, you know?
It would have been cooler if, like, a bunch of polar bears came out and they're like, oh, shit, they're going to eat those people.
They've just been hibernating for 17 fucking years, 18 years.
The twist ending is that with climate change, the polar bears that have been starving, they come back with vengeance.
That's right.
So it's happy if you're an environmentalist.
Yay.
But if you're a capitalist, it's not such a great movie. You're
fucked.
It definitely has the strong Ayn Rand feelings with the class system. I got the vibe if Wilford built this suspecting that the climate change was going to happen and the world was going to freeze. They didn't say it for sure. I mean, they say it in the show, but I had the feeling that everybody that had come on had been invited on and they were like-minded, sophisticated.
Yeah, people. It's one of those things that, like I said, the film does a good job of basically implying. If you're not given a straight answer, you're given plenty of hints to imply. Because like I said, they do that whole bit where they walk through the cafe. They walk up the ramp through the fucking hair salon. And there's just people going about their day. They walk through the fucking pool hall and there's just like a couple hanging out in a pool making out. And it's like they go through the sauna room. So you like, obviously there are people that are living here in this society. I mean, why do you have a schoolroom full of kids? Where'd those fucking kids come from if they didn't come from the tail? So a lot of stuff is heavily implied. If you're not given a direct answer, you're given a heavy implement of what's going on.
The reason that side character of the lady in the sauna that was my favorite is because that she was clearly hiding that girl. I don't think that she didn't know that girl was there. She was like trying to protect her in some way when that guy opened up the sauna. She like tried bitching him out.
Yeah, and he fucking killed her. And the other guy comes up, the cop comes like, you just killed a first-class citizen, blah, blah, blah. And then he shoots him down. It's like, that's kind of where your answer, again, is everything is implied, if not given directly to you, that like, okay, so they're a first-class passenger. Clearly, these are rich people that bought coach tickets or didn't buy coach tickets, you know?
I like when his lover gets killed and it's like that bar so that's sad. Sliding down. He tries to grab that girl, which he just basically like clasps her mouth.
Yeah.
And it's more like offended that he touched her than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think it's funny that he's just like, he can't do anything else. Ah, he killed me.
Yeah. The Carl Urban lookalike guy. That's who he looked like. Judge
he's
Dredd's
super
lookalike.
He's tall, too. He's like some of those guys with the masks or that first really big guy that you see that's like, was he swinging around an axe? I can't remember what he was swinging around.
Yeah, hammer.
Where that guy, like, I don't know, he was like a fucking monkey climbing up on the wall and then, like,
oh, yeah, the
heart.
Crazy guy, yeah. That guy is fucking wild.
The most agile person ever.
Yeah, and that's another thing. There's a lot of weird, random, great characters that, like, all throughout this film that are just so well done. Like, I loved every person from the tale. I thought they were all great. Especially, what's her name? The fucking Academy Award-winning actress.
Octavia.
Man, she was fucking great.
I liked her hiding that kid.
Yeah.
I thought at first when the woman was like, step aside, I thought she was going to recognize her. I didn't think that she's immediately going to be like, you're hiding a goddamn kid, aren't you?
They fucking know. They know what these people are doing. Just a great movie. Just super fun. I'm really glad I got to revisit this. I'm really glad I finally get a chance to talk about it with y'all because on our show, we haven't done TV to movies yet. Not in that aspect, at least. So thanks for having me on for this.
Or the foreshadowing awesome. That you had of Jamie Bell trying to surf on the cans. And then Chris Evans gets to kind of surf on the cans.
It's good stuff.
I feel like their window was a lot more than 4 seconds. These three doors are only open for 4 seconds. This was like a 15-second sequence, at least. They should have put the Beach Boys on Surfing USA as he was like.
Well, you just couldn't see what was happening all the time because of the constant zooming in. That's what it was. Zooming in
and the
you
doors
all.
Were really weak, like we can't close, we're trying.
Mm-hmm. They got people holding them back. It's good shit.
They weren't ready for that. No, it would have been an odd movie too if right off the bat Chris Evans shot himself in the head and he was just proved himself wrong and they just like killed them all.
Well, then you would have realized like, oh, it's one of those like it's a twist where it's like he's not the character you're gonna follow, it's gonna be Edgar instead.
Yeah, and Tilda Swinton's character does say, I think it's her, or maybe it's that other woman that comes in and picks the kid, says something about like 74% of you are gonna die.
Mm-hmm.
But that is like the precise number that Wilfred had sent down the line, is that to sustain herself, we need 74% to be eradicated.
I like the scene where Tilda Swinton was in the schoolroom and like all that shit goes down. Everyone, you know, it's a trap. She sets them up. Everyone's shooting guns, getting murdered. Everyone's dying. And then, you know, the bad guys get the upper hand again. They kill off fucking John Hurt's character. So there's Chris Evans just angry and he's walking over to Tilda Swinton. She's like, I didn't know. I didn't know it wasn't me. And he just doesn't fucking care at this point and just fucking blasts her in the head. It's like that kind of caught me off guard. I honestly thought she was going to stick around a little bit longer. That was halfway through the film. Halfway through the film, all this shit went down and they already killed off Tilda Swinton. So I thought that was really well done. That was a nice little surprise where it was like, yeah, fucking cool. Fuck that crazy bitch.
That made me think of like a BioShock there, Chuck, because she wasn't armed, but it just reminded me of that, like, they're crazy, just kill them. and move on.
Yeah.
The hero shoots an unarmed person in the head and continues on. The only thing that Jacob had said before I watched this was the whole bug thing, and that was revealed at like the 30-minute mark. So it was a quarter of the way through the movie. It wasn't even like the big reveal. And I felt overall like you really didn't spoil much of anything. There were so many more revelations as the movie went along.
To be fair, I believe when you co-hosted on our show, that was Lexi that gave away the bug reveal because she's a big advocate for eating bugs. So don't blame me. Blame her. That's on her.
I'm blaming the podcast.
Blame the whole podcast. That's a Three Deemers podcast, a podcast about remakes. Blame it.
They invited me on to their hard sci-fi just to ruin that for me.
Just to ruin it for you. That's all we wanted to do. It was a good time. Had fun. And you know what? I'm happy that I get to come back for your Snowden month, and I get to do a sci-fi theme with you because I fucking love sci-fi.
It was a great movie. I don't think that I've seen every Bong Joon-ho movie. I didn't see his anthology where he does like one of the movies out of three or four. I think it's just called like Tokyo Story, but I believe I've seen everything else now.
Yeah, I think the only one I still need to see is Parasite, which I will eventually get around to. Maybe the next time I come on with you guys, I can finally be like, I watched Parasite. I don't know.
We haven't done a Parasite episode.
Bring me on.
And what are we doing starting the very next episode, Chuck?
We're going to be covering a lot of different directors, really diving into their filmography.
So we might end up doing, we could do Bong.
Yeah, we'll see when we get there. Bong is great. We'll see what all we've got.
Parasite is very good. You'll be happy with it. And it's not Oscar bait. You're going to enjoy it.
Oh, yeah. No, I plan to see it. I just, life, man, so difficult. I had a whole year inside this house and I decided to just watch trashy movies instead. Catch up on my Andy Sedaris collection.
That's always a good time.
Hell yeah.
Hey, it's fair. You got to do that from time to time.
You got to. Chris Evans knows what babies taste like, and that's the greatest tagline ever.
Yeah, they definitely would have sold even more copies if that had literally just been what the poster said. I know what babies taste like.
I know what babies taste. And you know what? Like I said,
this movie is no joke, but it is also a dead baby joke.
It's the one big dead baby joke. I also love that after sitting through this movie, how you realize like it's beautifully written, it's brilliantly directed and very well put together, an amazing cast of actors. And it's the perfect middle finger to Harvey Weinstein. And that's what I'm happy to go out on. Fuck you, Harvey Weinstein.
It might be one of the last Weinstein Company movies.
It might be. I have no clue. It was one of those when it started. And I was like, I don't know. That was my first reaction was, oh, I didn't know Harvey Weinstein was like, it's been so long since I watched it. I was like, oh, I didn't remember him being involved in this film.
If this was 2013.
To be fair, it wasn't really that involved.
Yeah.
This came out 2014. And he didn't get, well, he got arrested recently. I think this year or last year. One old the big Me Too stuff was like 2017, so there has to be more movies, but it's close to the end, my friend. Chuck, thanks for picking this. We'll have to see how this podcast goes the next couple months. There is something coming up that I think that you should be on because it kind of is a bit of your concept.
Ooh, moi?
Yeah.
Ooh, what you got? What's in the works?
We won't spoil it on the episode so early, but there will be an episode that is basically a compare and contrast of an original movie and its remake.
Oh, I'm excited.
Who happens to be the same director.
Ah, yes, I love it. I'm here for it. I'm 100% here for it.
I know you said it was your off period, but you can still plug past episodes or future episodes of your podcast.
You. Of course. Three Deemers Podcast. It's a podcast about remakes. You can catch us on any podcast listening platform, Spotify, Anchor, Apple. We're out there. Please rate, subscribe, hit that like button and follow. We have a Christmas theme that we did in the previous season. We talk about Black Christmas, we talk about The Grinch, and we talk about Miracle on 34th Street, which, by the way, Miracle on 34th Street, the original, is a very, very brilliantly well done film. I loved watching it and having commentary on it. So listen to me and Lexi talk about that. And for fun, check out Black Christmas and listen to Lexi rant about a terrible, terrible remake while sharing the love of a really terrible, terrible remake. It's amazing. That's what we do. We just do a little compare and contrast, and we present the facts, and then we present our opinions on
the facts. The 2019 one is terrible.
fast.
It really is. It's really bad.
Here's my theory about that. The Black Christmas 2019, I absolutely enjoyed watching it, but in no way should it have been pushed as a remake in any way related to that. You could have kept the title. You could have kept the same film, just in no way push it as a remake, because it is not, in my opinion, an actual remake, but it is a fun movie, and I really enjoyed it.
It's weird. It didn't go hard enough for me.
It could have been a little more violent, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, like the...
But racist goo? Come on.
There's a cult aspect to it that I felt was really weak. I was like, it seemed like a half-hearted cult.
A half-hearted cult, yeah. With yeah, like racist, they didn't sexist, even really bigoted
wanna,
goo.
They didn't want to go full win on their cult.
But I mean, hey, Carrie Ewells, come on. It's great. It's fun times. It's fun time. But yeah, we did a Christmas theme month, so check it out if you want. We also recently had Justin on with us for our sci-fi month. It was great. We talked about Dune. We talked about Vanilla Sky, Open Your Eyes. It was a good time. All that fun shit. So come give us a listen if you're interested. And we will be back in January for a brand new season with a whole lot more to talk about.
I look forward to listening to it.
I look forward to having you back on with us. You'll be there.
And I'm plugging Chuck. Chuck has to be on eventually.
Chuck, we got it. Yeah. Me and Lexi want you, Chuck. So come on over.
Get there.
We'll get there.
Find something good.
You got it. I can't promise you we'll find anything good, but we cover remakes. There's really not much good out there. Unless you just like trashy films like me, I can give you something.
I love some garbage sometimes.
Hell yeah.
Except for our next several episodes. They're going to be high class, highbrow, sophisticated.
Oh, yeah. We're excited for our new season, too, because we're finally getting a professionally done. We've got our own original theme for our show. We're getting the plugs in. We're doing well. We're growing listeners. I think a lot of that's thanks to you guys coming on and all the work we did in the last season. We'll be cross promoted with other guest hosts. So that really helped.
Yeah,
push
it was
us
definitely because of us.
It was definitely because of you guys. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank
no,
you.
No, I have no idea. I doubt it.
Our one rating came from you, Justin. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. That rating helped.
Yeah, it's been enjoyable. We've been trying to become professional. We drop the ball a lot, but
nah, it's okay.
Never know. Sometimes there's a good episode. Sometimes there's terrible episodes.
You just gotta have fun.
We're winging our professionalism. Never know how it's going to be. This was a good theme, and now we're going to get into... We'll have a special episode next week, and then we'll move into the directors. So this is actually coming out on Christmas Eve.
Hey,
this is our Christmas episode. Our Christmas special, Snowpiercer. And then next week will be our New Year's Eve episode.
Well,
and then
Merry
we'll start
Christmas.
The year with directors.
I'm just that special gift to give your listeners. You're welcome,
you're
listeners.
The gift. You are
I am the gift.
Gift.
Yay! Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, and Happy Holidays to everyone.
Thank you for being on. We're Cinema Demore, me and Chuck. We're currently a two-man show. I'm at JJMorgan19 on Twitter.
ChuckFinn66.
Chuck doesn't even use his Twitter, but nope. I like when he plugs it. We're at Cinema Demore on Twitter. We're at /CinemaDemore on Facebook. That's where you follow us for all the great ads. Chuck, I look forward to your Snowpiercer ads that are already out at this point for everybody listening.
Just all babies.
But at the time of recording, I have no idea.
I haven't even seen them, and I've already loved them. Thanks, Chuck.
We made some suggestions. They were fantastic. We'll see what you did.
Tagline, I know what babies taste like.
Thanks for being on, Jacob. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thanks for having me.